and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at.
This has been one of the most expansive budgetary processes in the history of Chicago.
The mayor finally seals a budget deal. Our Spotlight Politics team breaks it down.
Lo and behold, come November 2021, I filed it.
And the long and sometimes mysterious process of getting clemency after decades in prison. And now to some of today's top stories. More details on the suspected shooter at a Christian school in Madison, Wisconsin. Authorities identified 15-year-old Natalie Rupnow, who went by the name Samantha, as the shooter at Abundant Life Christian School, where she was a student. A teacher and student were killed in the shooting, while six others were injured. Two are in critical condition. Police believe Rupnow died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Police are working to identify a motive, but say it appears to be a combination of factors. Mourners today made a sidewalk memorial to honor the victims and their families. The state of Indiana is planning its first execution in 15 years before sunrise tomorrow. 49-year-old Joseph Corcoran is set to die by lethal injection, despite his attorney's arguments that putting him to death would violate the 8th and 14th constitutional amendments because Corcoran has long suffered paranoid schizophrenia. He was convicted for the 1997 murders of four people, including his brother and his sister's fiancé. Last summer, Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb announced the state would resume executions after many years of not being able to obtain the drugs used in lethal injections. This has led many states to purchase the drugs from compounding pharmacies, though Indiana declines to say which pharmacy it purchased from. Southside residents may be receiving much greater access to health care as Advocate Healthcare announces a $1 billion investment to expand care and wellness services. The plan calls for 10 new neighborhood care locations, starting with the first one at the Southside YMCA. Additionally, Advocate will spend $300 million building a new hospital at the former U.S. Steel Southworks site, replacing the current Advocate Trinity Hospital, which is more than 115 years old. The healthcare provider says there is a 30-year life expectancy gap between residents on Chicago's South Side and those on the North Side. Your next food delivery order might cost less, or at least you'll know what you're paying for. Food delivery giant Grubhub has settled a lawsuit with both the Illinois Attorney General's office and the Federal Trade Commission after a joint investigation alleged the company had baited diners with low-cost or no delivery fees, then tacked on other service fees.
Top executives at Grubhub directed these deceptive practices and even described this fee structure as a pricing shell game. Customers complained to Grubhub that these tactics were misleading, but the company persisted.
The investigation also says Grubhub deceived delivery drivers into thinking they could earn more money and regularly listed restaurants on the platform that had not agreed to participate, leading customers to blame the restaurant when orders went wrong. The settlement announced today means Grubhub will pay $25 million and agrees to stop the practices described in the complaint. Illinois electors gathered in Springfield today to certify the state's electoral votes in the presidential election. The Illinois Secretary of State's office is in charge of certifying those votes. Similar ceremonies are being held in all 50 states today. It is one of the final steps to officially certify the race for president. Illinois has 19 electoral votes that will go to Democrat Kamala Harris since she won the state's popular vote. Congress will meet to count and certify all electoral votes on January 6th. Up next, prosecutors prepare to rest their case in the corruption trial of Michael Madigan. Our Spotlight team dives into that and more right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Mayor Brandon Johnson's budget proposal squeaks by city council. Meanwhile, prosecutors are set to rest their case against former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan And it's a growing debate in Illinois whether to put tighter regulations on the hemp industry. Here with all that and more is, of course, our Spotlight Politics team, Amanda Vinicky, Heather Sharoon, and Nick Blumberg. Welcome back, team. So the mayor finally got a budget deal passed yesterday. Heather, here's a little bit of what a supporter and an opponent of the budget had to say at City Council.
The truth is that this budget is fiscally responsible, and it is putting a down payment down on our future.
It's just smoke and mirrors. Don't congratulate yourselves, colleagues, for having passed a responsible budget that eliminated a property tax increase, because guess what? You're going to be coming back here next year, scratching your head, saying, well, how on earth did we get to this place?
And what a road it has been. Heather, you've reported that Chicago's finances remain badly out of whack. Does this budget fix that problem?
Well, the ultimate arbiter of that will be the Wall Street rating agencies that will now decide whether the city is as creditworthy as it was in the past. And there are a lot of factors that go into that decision. None of them are really clear or sort of based on like objective criteria. But it will honestly hurt the city that the city council refused to raise property taxes, because that is the most stable and effective way for the city to pay its bills. Now, I asked Mayor Johnson about this after the budget vote, and he said he hoped that the Wall Street ratings agency would look at everything else Chicago has going for it. You know, a diverse workforce, a diverse economy, labor peace. And he said that, you know, Chicago is going to figure this out, but its finances seriously remain out of whack.
And by the way, the credit ratings agencies already have a warning that they have issued to Chicago Public Schools. And of course, that is still unresolved when you look at the city's overall budget picture.
Of course.
Yeah, and I think when they're taking on those sorts of decisions, you know, labor peace is certainly a positive in terms of, you know, the political, you know, field. But there is a real cost to the city to any of these contracts, particularly ones that are more favorable to union members. That doesn't mean those folks don't deserve it, but that's also something that has to be taken into account when you're looking at the cost of running the city.
Didn't a previous Chicago mayor have lots of labor peace as well, but the pension problem ballooned out of control at the time?
Yes, and that is part of what Mayor Johnson is dealing with. The city's pension bill is nearly $3 billion in 2025. That means that money isn't available for services and police and mental health care. And the mayor says that there's not really anything the city can do to sort of, you know, bring those in line. And they're hoping for some help from some state lawmakers for that.
All right, let's come back to that in a minute, because Johnson acknowledged, as you said, Heather, that the city can't fix its financial problems on its own and will need state officials to change the law in order to do what he calls tax the rich. He knows this is not going to be easy, and the mayor knows it.
We cannot give up just because someone says no. We cannot give up just because they send out text messages blasting the interests of working people. You have a fighter in me. I didn't get here as a politician. I got to this seat as an organizer, as a part of the working movement in this city. So, hey, y'all, let's knuckle up, buckle up. You know, the fight is real.
Knuckle up and buckle up, like only a Chicago mayor can say. Amanda, any reason to believe that Springfield has the ability or the inclination to find more money for Chicago?
I mean, they would have the ability to make certain changes in law that would free up Chicago to do some of what the mayor wants. Do they have that inclination? No. No. I mean, to be clear, you've had Illinois try when Governor Pritzker put a lot of his own political capital and some of his money, he's got lots of it, so some of it, into trying to change the tax structure to a graduated rate so that the wealthy could be taxed at a higher rate, and voters said no to it. There is certainly a change perhaps in the atmosphere. You no longer have Ken Griffin here to fund opposition to it. Might there be more success a second go around? Perhaps. But the governor has shown no indication that he wants to go back and try again. That was a real big loss for him, and I don't think he's a great fan of losing. By the way, you also had Johnson, despite his saying, knuckle up, buckle up, he did not succeed in passing the tax that would have allowed him to increase the taxes paid on high-selling real estate sales. So
bring home Chicago.
Exactly.
Bring Chicago home.
bring Chicago home.
Thank
but I don't think that there is really an appetite for that. And so Illinois is going to have its own budget issues. We'll be talking about that plenty come February.
Of course. Mayor Johnson has filled 10 of the 11 seats on the Chicago School Board, the newly elected hybrid board. So he still controls it. Nick, what can you tell us about the folks that he's chosen?
That's right. We were waiting for this sort of Monday night deadline for the mayor to make these picks. As you mentioned, 10 out of 11, he gets to pick 10 board members and one president. The president is going to be Sean Hardin, who's a Southside native. He's a former CPS employee. Four of the folks that the mayor announced are already serving on this interim appointed board that we have now. There were also four of them who were unsuccessful candidates in the elections that were held last month that were backed by the CTU, obviously a close ally and former employer of Mayor Johnson. You know, a lot of these folks have education experience, have sort of progressive community organizing work, the kinds of people that you would expect the mayor to be appointing to this board. So clearly, with the folks that he's put into place, there's, you know, basically 15 out of 21 that are more or less aligned with the CTU. We didn't get any explanation as to why that 11th pick wasn't announced. It's not really clear under state law if there's any sort of a penalty. There doesn't appear to be for missing the deadline. So he's mostly there, but we're waiting on one more.
Waiting on one more. Heather, new board's going to have a lot on their plate, obviously, when they take their seats on January 15th. What's on the agenda?
Well, assuming that the interim board doesn't reach a deal with the Chicago Teachers Union, that will be a number one on their list to figure out. Not only do they have to figure out about what that deal includes, they have to figure out how to pay for it, because the district's 2025 budget will have to be amended to sort of give teachers raises and to expand whatever they end up agreeing to in terms of staffing and other services for students that CTU has demanded as part of that contract. They will also have to figure out the fate of CEO Pedro Martinez. The mayor has tried to oust him. The previous appointed board sort of declined to do so. The interim board hasn't quite gotten there yet. So it is not clear whether this elected board will move forward. Again, they can dismiss Pedro Martinez for cause immediately or trigger a six-month transition period. And then, of course, the big question is who this board will hire to lead the school district in this next era. So big, big things. Oh, and of course, President-elect Donald Trump has promised to make Chicago ground zero for his mass deportation issue. There are thousands of undocumented students in Chicago public schools, and the school district is really worried that ICE agents will target those students and their parents on school grounds.
And eliminating the Department of Education, potentially. And general, getting up to speed. I mean, you talk about all of these issues, but this is a huge budget, a huge bureaucracy that matters, of course, to all Chicago families, whether you have a student in CPS or not. And so outside of any of those issues, this is a huge change to contend with.
It'll also be interesting to see how this group of folks start to work together, because this is not a small board. Right. They've got a lot to do. And these folks might kind of know each other, but they might not. And then it's going to be interesting to see how they sort of coalesce to get work done.
And I wonder, too, to what degree the city council is going to try to continue to flex the very limited muscle that it has in this regard. But, you know, we saw a lot of contention after that, you know, board unanimously resigned, and there was an interim board, you know, really quickly put into place. That angered a lot of alder people, so it'll be interesting to see if they try to have any additional role here. But at this point, the mayor made his picks, which he is legally entitled to do, so I'm not sure what more might happen there, but I'm kind of interested to see whether that debate continues.
So let's get to the Madigan trial quickly. Nick, prosecutors are expected to rest their case tomorrow in the corruption trial of former House Speaker Michael Madigan, of course. What is the latest?
Yeah, we are 2 months into the trial proper here. Yes, the prosecutors have, finished all their testimony. They believe all their evidence presentation as well. They took sort of a long break today to make sure that all their ducks in a row. They're expected to wrap things up. And then the defense gets its turn. They're going to have, you know, just a couple of days this week. And then they are, of course, off next week for the Christmas holiday. But it's going to be very interesting. We've certainly seen, you know, plenty of vigorous cross-examination in this case. But the defense has not yet, you know, mounted its own case, called its own witnesses. So that's where we are headed.
One witness who prosecutors fought to put on the stand was former state representative Eddie Acevedo, who testified both yesterday and today. Why is he important to the prosecution? What did he say?
Well, he is sort of an exemplar of one of these do-nothing consulting contracts that, you know, prosecutors say Madigan was, you know, conspiring to get these deals for folks, you know, AT&T, ComEd. And it was interesting because it was pretty contentious testimony. You know, Acevedo has a myriad of health issues. He says he's been diagnosed with dementia, with a tumor, that he has seizure issues, that he has heart problems. And defense lawyers said this guy's not credible, in addition to sort of, you know, past issues where they've said he's not a reliable narrator, he has a drinking issue that they've tried to bring up. And on top of all these health problems, they said, we can't, you know, this testimony is going to be garbled. And that was sort of borne out. I mean, they asked him to, you know, go back and comment on some of the previous testimony that he gave to a grand jury about having a do-nothing consulting contract. But then on the stand this week, he said, no, I was having meetings. I was filling people in. And they said, well, sir, actually, here was your testimony where you said none of that happened. And he essentially said, okay, if that's what I told you. So it kind of, you know, exemplified what the potential issues with Acevedo's testimony here were and why people wanted to keep him off.
I wonder at all if that was sort of the point, to show that he was bumbling, perhaps outside of his health issues.
Yeah.
And that was the point. Put him on the stand to say, who would hire this guy?
Right. You have to imagine that, you know, someone with
maybe
all
that was part of the calculus.
Right. You have to imagine prosecutors had a reason to put on someone who they knew was likely to give some conflicting, confusing testimony.
It's not like they're flying by the seat of their pants or anything.
I would guess not.
I would guess not. Not this particular federal office. All right. That is where we're going to leave it. Heather Sciarron, Nick Blumberg, and Amanda Vinicky. Thanks, gang.
Thank you.
Up next, a look at how clemency works in Illinois and who's still waiting for it. President Joe Biden recently granted clemency to nearly 1,500 Americans, in addition to the pardon he gave his son Hunter earlier this month. That executive clemency is designed to extend mercy and restore opportunity for people convicted of crimes and have demonstrated successful rehabilitation. But in Illinois, that grace has been slow to come for people with criminal records, some of whom are still in prison. The Illinois Prisoner Review Board, which processes applications for clemency, says this year, Governor J.B. Pritzker has granted only 6 clemency petitions, compared to 57 in 2023 and 11 in 2022. But he granted 144 in 2020 and 2021 each. Here's a look at how the process works in Illinois and what it means for people who are waiting. It's the thought of these two young boys that brings tears to Alberto Zavala's eyes.
Everything that I've done has been because of them. Everything. It's my ultimate goal is to get back to them.
These young boys are now young men who grew up while their father serves his 56-year sentence in Illinois Department of Corrections.
They inspire me to do better so I could be better because I want them to know that I'm not defined by my bad decisions.
48-year-old Zavala, known as Beto, isn't scheduled for release until 2054. He's been behind bars for 22 years, currently at Hill Correctional Center in northwestern Illinois. Over the years, he says he's taken every educational opportunity he can find.
Foundations to criminology, law, politics, and mass incarceration, a masculinity class, a feminist class. I took the Inside Out Dad. That's one of the first classes that I took, the Inside Out Dad class.
All not just to be a better father for his sons, but also with the hopes of earning his release sooner than 2054. Zavala is one of 1,100 people who submitted petitions for clemency to the Illinois Prisoner Review Board in 2021 alone. He's one of 535 that landed on Governor J.B. Pritzker's desk. He's likely one of hundreds still sitting on the governor's desk awaiting an answer.
So it's been 2.5 years.
Yeah.
What have you been thinking for the last 2.5 years?
What more can I do?
It seems like in Illinois, clemency is really one of the only options to get people out of prison.
Yeah, clemency is the only option in the state of Illinois that anyone who's incarcerated can avail themselves of. There are other mechanisms for folks to be released, but they're extremely narrow. So for the vast majority of people, there is no mechanism to say, hey, my sentence no longer makes sense, my incarceration no longer makes sense, other than clemency.
Here's how the process works. With or without an attorney, an incarcerated person petitions the Illinois PRB.
We recognize 20 years as the statutory minimum.
And is granted a hearing to make their case.
Her out date is 2049. It's too harsh.
Successful clemency petitions show the incarcerated person as they are today. They talk about the incarcerated person's relationship with their loved ones. They talk about the sort of path of rehabilitation from their initial incarceration to today. They show hopes and dreams and what they'll do for their community if they're able to return home.
Tell your mother that I said you've got great hair.
As in most cases, Zavala included a statement of remorse for the murder that happened back in 2001. It reads in part, quote, I know I wasn't there and I didn't pull the trigger. But it feels like I did this because Philip McGovern lost his life over what I put in motion, which ultimately led to his death. Zavala was convicted for murder on the theory of accountability, meaning because he sent men to rob the victim to pay a drug debt, he too is responsible for the murder that happened when the robbery went wrong.
Somebody Beto's age, and given the period of time he served, has a likely recidivism rate of around 1%. Beto is like thousands of other people, though, in this regard, for whom continued incarceration makes absolutely no sense from a public safety perspective.
But in addition to looking at who petitioners are today, board members must also consider their victims and loved ones.
We hear their pleas, and those victims, at least on the sentences for incarcerated people, their protests carry great weight with the board. Victimization is multi-generational. The victim protest is very important to be heard.
Craig Findley served under 5 governors on the PRB, several times as chair. He says board members consider both the crime all those years ago and the person in front of them now.
Equally important is the petitioner's statement about the facts of the crime that led to their incarceration. Do they admit guilt? And if so, tell us what led to that and what you've learned from that crime. We want them to tell us about what the future will hold if they're released.
We as his family will continue to support them.
But another concern that advocates have about the process, once a petition is sent from the PRB to the governor...
At that point, the whole application is in the governor's hands. At that point, the system is a black box.
And that's by law. Findley says that confidentiality is to protect the victim's privacy as well as the process itself.
And I don't see a remedy. And I don't know that there is a remedy that would provide transparency to the point that would breach our confidentiality reporting and would pressure the governor to make a decision before he or she is ready to make that decision.
And that decision can take time.
We have had cases where a person's clemency petition was granted in a matter of weeks after we filed them. We also have cases right now that were filed in 2020 and are still pending.
Thank you, everybody who came in here and showed your support.
It's important to remember Prison Review Board has a staff that devote a great deal of their work to winnowing these petitions that can run into many hundreds of pages. For us to review those and distill them into a fairly succinct report to the governor, it takes a lot of time. I don't
know where. As a person with nothing but time, Zavala is prepared to wait and maintain hope.
I have a lot of plans upon being released from prison. I want to start my own trucking firm. I want to start a nonprofit vocational reentry trucking school.
What do you know about trucking?
I know a lot about trucking.
Do you? Did you learn it while you were in here?
Yeah.
When was the last time you drove a truck?
I never drove a truck, but because prior to being incarcerated, I was one of the youngest overhead crane operators at Central Steel and Wire Company. Everybody has a gift. They just got to bring it out.
A statement from Governor Pritzker's spokesperson says, quote, since taking office, Governor Pritzker has focused on creating a more equitable, safe, and efficient criminal justice system in Illinois. Governor Pritzker has signed 389 clemency petitions, exceeding many other states. While there is more work to be done reviewing cases and reforming the system, Governor Pritzker is proud to have made Illinois a leader on clemency action and prioritized justice. His office also points out that while clemency is an important tool, the governor also supports additional pathways for individuals to move past their prior convictions. And tune in to WTTW on Friday, December 27th for the film In Their Hands. Tells the story of another man's fight for freedom through parole after 47 years in Illinois prisons. For more on that, you can visit our website. And that's our show for this Tuesday night. Be sure to sign up for our free email newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan, at WTTW.com/newsletter. While you're there, check out our website for the very latest from WTTW News. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. A crop of new tech apps connecting temps with jobs. What it means for those workers. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to give back to its community in Chicago and beyond.